Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. While Congress wrangles over climate change legislation, many consumers are making small changes of their own that make both environmental and economic sense. As part of our ongoing series on the environment, we talk about these steps and the overall difference consumers can make. Here in the studio with me is Steve Nadel of the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. From a studio at WGBH in Boston, Seth Bauer of Cooler, Inc. And from a studio at NPR in New York City, Wendy Gordon. She's the editor of the Simple Steps and Smarter Cities websites at the National Resources Defense Council. Welcome to you all. Thanks for being with us. You can join our conversation, 1-800-433-8850. I'm particularly interested this morning, since we're going to be talking about consumers and what a difference individuals can make. Call in with your suggestions, your experiences, things perhaps you've learned to do or things your communities are doing so that individuals around the country can get a sense of what people are really doing. You can also email your suggestions at drshow@wamu.org. Wendy, I'm going to start with you. Kind of a simple question, but an important one. Can individuals make a difference?
Absolutely. And good morning to you. Individuals can make a huge difference, even though what they're doing are small, everyday actions. The simplest things in your daily life, from recycling, is actually one of the most profoundly important things that you can do, and it has huge impacts. Right here in New York, we recycle about 2.9 pounds of per week each household, and that's having tremendous impact already, reducing global warming gases. About half a million metric tons of carbon dioxide were reduced through recycling efforts. So that's one that we've been doing for 30 years, but yet we still have so much more to do, and it makes a huge difference, our little efforts every day.
Seth, you wrote in the introduction to a book that Wendy, of course, has also been very instrumental in developing, the National Geographic Green Guide. And you say there are a lot of myths about this, and one is that if you're going to make a contribution, you have to sacrifice and go back to a much simpler 19th century way of life. And you say that's a myth that's just not true.
Absolutely. And, you know, the way I look at it is, I think over the last 50 years, we've been living in the frat party years of human consumption, where really with very little regard to what we're doing, we rip stuff out of the ground, we make stuff out of it, and we throw it over our shoulders when we're done with it. And my take is the next generation is going to look back and realize how ridiculously wasteful all of that's been. And so you can, as Wendy was saying, you can cut your personal carbon footprint easily by 10 to 20% without any noticeable sacrifice whatsoever.
And one of the things you point out in this book, Seth, is that while modern technologies are often blamed for pollution and damage to the environment, that you point out that a lot of modern technologies are actually energy efficient, and that new technologies are really a friend of the Green Revolution, not an opponent of it.
That's been the nice thing about the last, I'd say, 15 years or so of technology is, efficiency has moved near the top of the list as people are designing and creating products. There are even, you know, retailers such as Walmart starting to set standards for the products that they will carry and sell to consumers. Really, one of the reasons we've been able to be so wasteful, that we've had this frat party, is that energy was so cheap. And now that and other kinds of resources, energy, water, natural chemicals, have been so inexpensive. And now that they are becoming rarer and dearer, everything is becoming much more efficient.
Steve Nadel, give me a sense of what you've learned about how to involve individuals, how you educate them, how you reach them, how you change their mindsets to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
I think it's important to give consumers the information on what they can do that will help reduce their energy use, improve their comfort, reduce their carbon emissions. A lot of people are just lacking for that information. Mm-hmm. You also often need to provide them technical assistance. If, they don't know how to find a contractor for insulation, you know, have a hotline that they can call and other information so you can make it easier for them. And if you do those things, give them the information, make it easy, I think many consumers will respond.
But there has to be a step before that. They have to go looking for that information. They have to change their minds to say, I'm going to be an activist in this movement, even if it's only in terms of the personal choices I make. How do you get them to that point?
Yes, you do need to get awareness to show them that there's a lot that they can do and make them motivated to say that, yes, I do want to do it. And part of that is just showing them what the benefits are to them as well as to the environment. Things like, you know, improved home comfort or lower energy bills, things like that will help motivate people and get them to start walking down this path.
Wendy, you want to add something?
Yes. You know what we have found over the years, and with the Green Guide, which Seth and I worked on, but I worked on in the 90s as well, people are motivated by a lot of different things. And what a person active in this area seeks to do is reach them on it through those channels that matter to them. So we were often kind of encouraging people around child health issues or budgetary issues or things that really matter first. Often it's not energy efficiency that they're thinking about. They're thinking about, well, how to take care of their kids and, mm-hmm. and create a safer home environment. And often the one leads to the other, and you realize that actually electronic equipment emits things into the environment that you don't want your child exposed to, or changing the mm-hmm. subject to paints or other kind of interior decorating things that matter to those families. But also now, as energy prices are going up, then the savings benefits from using efficient appliances or making your home, insulating your home, those things now matter to people. Pocketbook issues always do sort of spark people's interest.
Well, Wendy, this is an interesting point because often the cliche is, well, being energy efficient is actually a luxury. And you're pointing out quite the opposite, that actually it can save money and it can be in someone's own interest rather than just a gesture, an ideological or political gesture.
Oh, absolutely. It saves a lot of money, and people spend a lot of money on wasteful, sieve-like houses. So, and we've been building houses poorly over the last 50 years. So finally, energy efficiency is becoming kind of more fashionable, more in vogue, because people are realizing they can save so much. And every dollar and cent matters, particularly as income is sort of... Mm-hmm. Static, and people are losing their jobs. I mean, you find so many people now very, very, very aware of these things and very attuned to tiny little changes that matter so much.
Steve.
Sometimes some of the simplest things will bring that out. And that's, for example, I grew up in a house without air conditioning. And so every morning in the summer, my mom would go around the house and she would close curtains and lower shades on the sunny side of the house and close the windows. And sure enough, it kept the house, you know, reasonably, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. reasonably comfortable. And I now live in a house that does have central air, but we still go around and we close the shades and we keep our air conditioning, you know, relatively moderate. And we don't really spend a lot of money or use a lot of energy cooling our house.
And Steve, pick up on this. If people are listening to us and say, gee, that makes sense. You know, these guys have something to say. How did someone then go from that awareness to doing something? What tips would you give? What suggestions to someone listening to us to say, well, I want to get involved in this. I want to do some things for myself, too.
Okay. Let me first give an example that helps amplify what mm-hmm. Wendy said, and that will lead mm-hmm. to the answer to your question. In New York State, they have a program called the Home Performance with Energy Star program, where they help people to improve the efficiency of their homes. They're reducing energy use in the homes by a quarter to a third, so enormous bill savings. They're finding that people are motivated in part by the bill savings, but they're in part motivated by improved comfort. The homes are less drafty. The surfaces are warmer. They feel more comfortable. They're motivated by safety concerns. There's less likely to be, leaky exhaust and things that could be unhealthy. So they're doing that. So to answer your question, find out if there are local programs in your area. Contact your local utility, your local state energy office, what programs they may have to assist you in these areas. Start thinking about your lighting is one of the easiest things you could do. Many people have switched to compact fluorescent bulbs. They use about one-third to one-quarter of the energy of a typical bulb. So start using those. They're available at hardware stores everywhere.
And one of the things that I noticed in reading some of your materials is that actually a number of states and cities have rebate programs for energy-efficient appliances. And this goes to the point of it doesn't have to be a gesture. It can actually be in your own interest and save you money.
Exactly. Roughly half the utilities in this country are offering some type of rebate programs.
And how do you find out about those?
I'd contact your local utility, check their website. They often will have information. Contact your local energy office. They'll have information. Also, there's new federal stimulus money that's starting to go to the states and cities. And in the next few months, that will show up as increased rebate programs for consumers as well.
You can also adjust your...
Please go ahead, Wendy. Yeah.
Well, you can also adjust your mortgage by making energy-saving changes to your home. So there's
You mean people will actually mortgage?
I think it's also through a rebate. Yeah,
yeah.
I believe it's through a rebate program, but Steve may be able to help.
And quickly, before we take a break, another example of this was the Cash for Clunkers program, where people were subsidized to trade in less energy-efficient cars.
Mm-hmm.
Wendy, did you think that worked?
I did. It got a fair amount of criticism, including from environmentalists, but I happen to believe it was a terrific program. I think the concern was that it didn't require that you get a really efficient car.
Right.
So the margin of improvement was modest. But, a lot of this really adds up, and it's the little changes that matter most.
That'll have to be the last word for this segment. We're going to be right back with your calls and your questions. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and our subject this hour is part of our ongoing series on the environment. What you as individuals can do to save energy and make your homes, your cars, your lives more efficient. I have three experts with me to talk about this. In the studio is Steve Nadel from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. From Boston, Seth Bauer of Cooler Inc., and from New York, Wendy Gordon, who edits the Simple Steps and Smarter Cities websites at the National Resources Defense Council. 1-800-433-8850 is our number. drshow@wamu.org. Our email address. Steve, you were saying you wanted to add something about the Cash for Clunkers program that consumers figured this one out.
Yes. The program is designed by the government was not very smartly designed. It allowed a big incentive for just saving 2 or 3 MPG, miles per gallon. But consumers actually bought much more efficient vehicles than that. The average was about a 9 mile per gallon improvement. So in this case, consumers really stepped up to the plate. They were a lot smarter than the government.
And it sounds like also that the car companies are following this consumer desire for more energy efficient cars. A lot more are coming on the market. It's not just the Prius anymore.
Right. There are new products being introduced. Also, several of the manufacturers have announced that they're increasing production of the fuel-efficient cars as a result of this program.
And Seth, is that a larger principle at work, that as consumers become more educated, that the marketplace will follow and produce more energy-efficient, whether it's appliances or any other devices that people use?
Yeah, I'd say there's no doubt about that. It's a little chicken and egg, I think.
Yeah.
There are some manufacturers and retailers who are leading consumers in that direction, and that there are many consumers who are pushing manufacturers in that direction. And you know, there's a happy outcome both ways.
Now, I want to read you something you wrote, Seth, to play a bit of a devil's advocate here. You argue in the introduction to National Geographic's Green Guide that people can become aware. And that they have to become aware of the footprint. And you use the example of orange juice. And let me read what you say. But look again at buying orange juice, this time through that green lens. Now you think about how and where the oranges are grown. Did the grower use pesticides that leached into the soil or streams nearby? Was there plenty of natural water for the orange trees, or was it diverted from other sources? And the manufacturing of the juice, is it energy intensive to turn it into concentrate? It can't be efficient to turn juice into concentrate, then reconstitute it before sending it to market. Then there's the packaging and the transportation. Does any consumer have time to ask these questions and find the answers to these issues that you pose?
The answer is probably no, but I don't know that it's necessary to in order to be a greener consumer. My point was, when you make any consumer decision, you look at it through a lens.
Mm-hmm.
And the lens that we have adopted over the last 40 or 50 years is, how easy is this for me to buy and dispose of? It's the lens of disposability. And very often that puts it, you know,
mm-hmm.
Think of everything that we buy that's disposable: paper plates, napkins, cups. You walk down the aisles of a grocery store, and or any kind of store, and disposability becomes paramount. And what I would argue is that leads to really three terrible outcomes: a really bad environmental outcome, a really bad usage outcome. Would have a more pleasant aesthetic experience eating off a china plate with metal silverware than a paper plate with plastic silverware.
But people would point out that china plate has to be washed, the water has to be heated, detergents go into the ecosystem. I mean, it's not – these cost-benefit analyses are not always easy.
Can I give another example of one that actually where public education really has mattered a great deal? And that's the example of the single serving plastic water bottle,
mm-hmm.
Which is a boom business. But it's also a huge waste. It has terrible impact on the environment at every stage from its manufacture right through disposal. So everybody realizes it's a problem. Even, the average consumer is not thinking about it when they're buying their $2 designer bottle on the streets of New York. But that said, there has been campaigns in the past 18 months in cities across America, including here in New York, but elsewhere, that were extremely effective. And believe it or not, it has put a dent in the growth of that market. And people are now carrying the alternative, the much more environmentally responsible alternative. They're carrying their water in thermoses and reusable containers, or they're asking for tap at restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants are no longer allowed to they must offer tap water as their sort of first option. So that is really a great example of water from your tap is virtually free. And in most cities, New York is one example, the water quality is fantastic.
Right.
And And we should be putting, we should really be encouraging our government to be supporting the water supply protection programs that are great. And here in New York, it's good, but it could be improved. And so it's kind of just this misdirected energy going towards a private industry and water that's basically the same quality. It's coming from the same sources almost as your tap
water.
Well,
that is a good example. I want to ask our other two guests, Steve and Seth, to give me another one of your favorite examples, like the bottled water that that Wendy mentioned. What would be one of yours, Steve, that people can relate to?
A couple of examples that I can think of. One is telecommuting, where it's appropriate. We have several people at our place of business that do that. They don't have to spend all the time and hassle as energy to get to and from the office, but we can hook them up via the internet, talk to them on the phone. Enormous energy and hassle saver. Also, online shopping. Instead of having to go to the store, yes, sometimes you need to go to the store, you have to try on things, et cetera, but there are things you can do. Much less hassle, much less energy use.
Seth, what are
some
of your
favorite? Can I add on to that one?
Well,
you can ask Seth, but I'd like to add on to that online shopping when Seth's done.
Go ahead, Seth. What are some of your favorite examples?
I'd like to look at reusables. You know, one thing we did at Cooler, which is this company I'm part of now that has a way of measuring, very efficient way of measuring carbon footprints, is we did a study with eBay. And we looked at the we compared the carbon footprint of a new good to a used good, because obviously a big part of eBay's business is to resell existing goods, and we discovered that basically just in eBay's handling of handbags, so used women's pocketbooks. The energy savings over the course of a year in the number of used women's pocketbooks that they sell compared to the manufacturer of those cover virtually all of eBay's own carbon footprint.
Interesting. Wendy, what were you going to add?
Well, I was just going to jump on the Steve's point about the online shopping, and that's the junk mail we get, a lot of which is catalogs. 19 billion catalogs, I think, are delivered to our doors across America.
I think a third of them are delivered to my house.
Well, I put myself on a low carbon diet in 2007. It was my New Year's resolution, and one of the things that I did was stop my junk mail. I didn't stop it altogether, but I used a number of different online services that help you to clean out your mailbox, and it really, they're incredibly effective. But that's kind of a lot of online shopping is driven still by catalogs that are brought into.
So if you really want to be energy efficient, stop the catalogs, go to the website, don't print all that stuff on paper.
Yeah, and it's easy. It's extremely easy to do. These websites make it very, very simple. And it saves tons of paper, and all those trees don't have to be destroyed.
Now, let me ask all of you to look beyond individual choices to communities. Are there things that communities can do together? Because some examples that you've discovered where people are working together on these things. Steve, do you have any examples of that?
Yes. Up in Vermont, they have a statewide energy-saving program called Efficiency Vermont, and they've gotten some of their best results by concentrating at the local community level, setting certain targets for a local community, encouraging everybody to come together to meet the target, and then if the target is hit, they buy some new equipment for the school or something like that. But they've been incredibly successful, gotten enormous participation rates in terms of the energy savings they're looking for. And I think just about every time they've done this, the community has easily met the target and gotten some extra bonus. They felt good, and then they have something for the school, for the police station, et cetera.
Seth, what's your view of this?
It can be a very small community. I live outside Boston in a suburb called Needham. And first of all, I know of at least five groups that have started up in my town, one through some of the churches and religious organizations. One is just a town citizens group. So people are getting involved in this. But one thing I've started to see is groups of four or five or six neighbors not feeling like each one of them needs to own each piece of equipment that they use to use and, you know, maintain their houses. So they share a ladder, they share a lawnmower, they share a snowblower, they share, you know, all kinds of basic goods. Again, it goes to that reuse or shared notion where, you know, we feel like we have to fill our garage with everything. We each need our own whatever. And really, it doesn't need to be that way.
Wendy, what's your take on this dimension of it?
Well, actually, that's one of the things that Smarter Cities is all about. It's a new website, smartercities.nrdc.org. But there's three things I'd like
say
to
that
mention.
Say that website
okay,
a little more slowly.
Smarter, so S-M-A-R-T-E-R, cities, all one word, .nrdc.org. Oops, did you lose me?
No, please go ahead.
I've lost you. Oh, there we go. Okay. So what we do is actually try to help cities of all sizes to become more sustainable and learn from each other. So I would say there's three areas where there's a lot of activity at the local level, citizens engaging with their governments and businesses involved as well. Food is one of the biggest ones, and that's been kind of growing over the years with farmers markets and CSAs and increasing access to food in neighborhoods that have become sort of food deserts where you don't have even fresh foods available through supermarkets and so forth. Transportation is obviously one that and sort of access to transit, public transit is a big thing that communities are paying more and more attention to and very, very important so that there's more places for people to live, more places for people to work, and easy availability of buses and public services.
And part of the perspective of a carbon footprint, when you're talking about locally grown produce at farmers markets, of course, a peach that's grown in the neighborhood is a lot less impact than a peach that's trucked up from Georgia.
No, absolutely. And that the food shed, it supports not only, well, it provides great healthy food for people, the most healthy, but it also supports the network of farmers that are in your region. Whether they're growing organically or not, often the small farmers that are in that food shed are sort of more ecologically responsible. And
Never heard before, food shed.
Oh, okay.
It's comparable to watershed.
Hold
on just one second. I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Explain that term, Wendy.
Well, it is comparable to a watershed, not so easily defined, because a food shed is really everywhere you get your food from. So it could include your coffee from Central America. But
they don't grow a lot of coffee in New York, so you probably
have to import that. But it does it's trying to include in the equation all those different factors like transportation costs, et cetera.
Let's turn to some of our emails, and we've got a lot of them who want to join this conversation. We'll start with Jocelyn, who writes to us, "I think the easiest way of saving energy is for people to hang their washing on the line instead of putting it in a clothes dryer. I hardly ever use my dryer, even though I live in Michigan. In the summer, the clothes dry very quickly. In the winter, you can add to the humidity in the air by using a drying rack." What do you think of that, Wendy?
Well, I am in full agreement. Actually, I hardly ever dry my personal clothes because I don't like the way the dryer it wears them out. So that's my personal and sort of selfish reason for not using a dryer. But from an energy point of view, dryers are extremely wasteful. And if you can reduce your use using drying racks or sunshine's the best disinfectant, as they said, though that was a Supreme Court justice.
Monica writes to us from Oldenburg, Indiana. "I'm disappointed with the compact fluorescent light bulb. They don't seem to last much longer than a standard incandescent bulb. The light they provide is gloomy, and worse, they contain mercury. I feel guilty about putting them in the trash, but don't have access to a recycling center that takes them. Any chance a household LED bulb will come out soon?" You were talking about this, Steve.
Yes, a couple of comments. First, to answer your last question, yes, there are some household LED bulbs. They're quite expensive. The quality's, on average, not quite as good. But
LED stands for?
Light-emitting diode.
Okay.
But in terms of the compact fluorescent, there were some older products that were not very good. Even still, there are some products that are not very good. Look for the Energy Star label on those. They have certain quality control standards to make sure that they are a certain brightness, that they last a certain period of time, that you'll do much better with those than just any old product that doesn't have that Energy Star label.
Now, you mentioned Energy Star. That also is a label that's on other kinds of appliances. Is that a government standard comparable to the old, Parents Magazine seal of approval?
Yes, somewhat. It's a program jointly run by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Energy. It's on appliances, heating and cooling equipment, electronics like, DVD players and computers, and it always marks the products roughly that are the upper one quarter in terms of energy efficiency.
Helen writes to us from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. A UN report on global warming has told us clearly that the most useful thing we can do to combat global warming is to cut down or stop eating meat. I'm wondering why this is seldom talked about in shows such as yours. Seth, do you have a reaction to Helen?
Meat consumption is very carbon intensive. So on one hand, she's absolutely right. We also,
why is that? Is that because the raising of the animals and transportation goes into that?
Yeah, essentially, the raising of the animals, it just takes a whole lot of feed mm-hmm. to raise, an animal for slaughter. In the global view of it, it's a very inefficient way to produce food. And certainly, there are ideas of people becoming once or twice a week vegetarians, and that would make a huge difference in our carbon footprints.
That's Seth Bauer from Cooler Incorporated, from Cooler Inc., from a studio in New York. Also Wendy Gordon, who edits the Simple Steps and Smarter Cities websites at National Resources Defense Council. Steve Nadel is with me here from the American Council of Energy Efficient Economy. I'm Steve Roberts. Come back. We'll have your questions and your calls.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds whose mission is to maximize the power of philanthropy to strengthen communities at fjc.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And by the Pew Charitable Trusts, whose financial reform project provides analysis to guide the debate over financial modernization at pewtrusts.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Quentin Tarantino about his new film, Inglourious Basterds, and about the style of writing and the use of music that he became famous for, starting with Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our subject this hour is what you can do as part of the effort to conserve energy, part of our ongoing series on the environment here at the Diane Rehm Show. Steve Nadel is with me from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, Seth Bauer of Cooler Inc., Wendy Gordon from the National Resources Defense Council. I have
Steve?
Just one second. Yes?
Okay. Comment further on the recent call about meat?
Yeah.
Or
go ahead.
Do you want to go?
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to. It's also important in reducing your meat consumption because it is a it produces it relies on feedlot animals are eating corn, which is a very fuel-intensive and energy-intensive crop to raise. But grass-fed beef is actually the more environmentally responsible way to go for multiple reasons. And so while you do want to be cutting down on your red meat consumption overall, when you do choose to eat red meat, try as hard as you can to buy grass-fed.
And is that generally labeled pretty clearly?
It is. And what you want to be thoughtful, though, mindful of, is that not all labels that say grass-fed are 100% grass-fed. So they might go to feedlot in the last few days of their life or week, or, you know, weeks of their mm-hmm. life. And that's an important thing to make sure that you are getting 100%. They spend their entire life on grass, because actually it loses its health benefits when they go to feedlot. And which is probably the most important thing, is that the health benefits of grass-fed mm-hmm. beef diminishes greatly by going to a feedlot, even for a short amount of time.
Let me read a few more of these emails. This one comes to us from Facebook. We've been encouraging our listeners here on the Diane Rehm Show to use Facebook to contact us. And here's Vanessa. I'm actually looking at your picture, Vanessa, when I read this. I just started a carpool program at the local elementary school by providing surveys to families and then matching those who were interested based on proximity and schedule. I provided carpool guidelines so families felt safe with one another. Imagine removing 20 cars out of the school car line each day, saving time, gas money, and emissions. Steve Nadell.
Great. That's a great idea. Vanessa, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, those types of things can really make a difference. If you have one car instead of two or three, that's great. And you have someone to talk to on the way.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
If I can jump in, there's a National Safe Routes to School program which supports walking to school for those who live within reasonable distance. And again, that's something that we did as children without thinking about it. And suddenly, you know, in this generation, it seems to have been removed from the story. And I walked my son to school. He's now in college. But when he was in elementary school, we walked to school. And I ran into the crossing guard recently who used to help him across the street. And she remembered him because so few children walk every day to her elementary school.
Speaking of transportation, this is from Thao Min in Junction, Texas. 55-mile-per-hour speed limit. It saves money for the individuals who slow down. It cuts down the nation's dependence on foreign oil. And we don't have to wait for the government to pass the law. Each of us can do it now. It works instantly. We don't have to buy new cars. Let's spread the word on this idea. Wendy, your reaction?
No, that's absolutely right. I actually remember when we imposed, back in the Carter days, 55-mile-an-hour speed limits so that we could reduce our gas use. There's other great and simple ways, and Steve can chime in, to make your car more efficient. Keeping the tire pressure inflated properly is an easy one. Removing the heavy luggage and bags you tote around is another, so that there's and not carrying things on the roofs unless you absolutely have to just removes the draft mm-hmm. and weight of the car. So there's lots of ways that if you do drive a car and you regularly drive a car, you can keep it as efficient and as you can.
And Joan writes to us, and this is a interesting, Steve. She says, "Hi, I recently had to replace my furnace and very much wanted to get the most efficient model. I just couldn't afford it. Despite the rebates, why are these better furnaces so expensive?"
The better furnaces are a little bit more expensive because they have more advanced materials, if you will, special steels that won't corrode. But sometimes the manufacturers combine the higher efficiency with lots of extra bells and whistles, things that you may or may not want, that drives up the cost. So we've been encouraging the manufacturers to come out with products that are just efficient without the bells and whistles. Some of them do, some of them don't.
So a consumer should look for like the economy model without all the extras.
Right. I mean, if you like the extras, go for it.
Yeah,
if one product doesn't work, see if you could find a product maybe without certain features but still has the efficiency.
And would be more affordable.
Yes.
Okay, let's turn to Brandon in Washington, D.C. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show. Brandon?
Hi. Thanks for having the show, Steve. I wanted to call because I am in a group called Carbon Free D.C., and you were talking about community efforts before. We had noticed that a lot of people were struggling in D.C. to pay their utility bills because they were going up very quickly, and with the recession, people were just having a hard time. So we had applied for a grant with National Geographic and won $20,000 from them. And we're going to use the money to help green 20 homes in D.C. And two struggling neighborhoods. And just, you know, with $1,000 per home, we really think we can make a big difference on these people's utility bills and just making small changes that will really help them over many years to pay lower electricity bills and live like a greener lifestyle.
Thank you so much. Wendy, I know you've been, both you and Seth have been involved with National Geographic. What's
your
reaction?
That's terrific. I think that's fantastic. I know about that contest and I thought it was great. So congratulations to you and good job you're doing.
Jennifer in Akron, Ohio, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Hi, are you there?
Yeah, we're here. Please go ahead.
I'm sorry. We were sitting at the library. I wanted to thank you for bringing up the meat thing on the show. I'm often distressed that it's not part of the dialogue when we're talking about greenhouse gases and the environment. And since that's already covered, I guess I would just say maybe if folks were interested, there's a 2006 UN United Nations report that the meat industry produces more greenhouse gases than the transportation industry globally. And if anybody was interested, they could look that up. It might give them a little momentum because I'm from Ohio. I used to eat meat. I used to make the hamburgers and fry, you know, cook up the steak. But just the environment issue is enough to make me give that up. And maybe it would be enough to make someone else give it up if they were to look into it.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
We appreciate it. Let's talk to Jim in Carrollton, Texas. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Oh, thank you. And by the way, I'm a heating and air conditioning contractor.
Good. What's on your mind?
The question that you had talked about why those furnaces are so expensive,
mm-hmm.
because of the very efficient motors that they have in them and the electronics that it takes to run that thing right. But I called about something else. I have discovered something that is so powerful. It's attic ceiling. Sealing the attic off from the house can reduce your energy bills 20% to 40%.
Hmm.
In some cases, 50% or more. Imagine if we did that across the country on a national basis and reduced our energy usage by 25%. It would drive down the cost of energy. It would raise our standard of living.
Let me just clarify. When you say seal off, do you mean permanently seal them off, or just make them more energy efficient?
No. What we do is we use a blower door test to find the leaks between the attic and the house,
uh-huh.
and we seal them.
Uh-huh.
But they don't have that energy interchange between your attic, which may be cold in the winter and hot in the summer.
Okay,
and
Jim.
When you stop that, it reduces your energy usage by 20% to 40%.
Interesting. Steve Nadell.
Yes, he's absolutely right. There are a lot of hidden leaks between the home and the attic, or often between the home and the crawl space of the home and the basement. And with the blower door, it helps pressurize the house. It helps magnify these leaks. You can find them and seal them. It can make a real big difference. 50% savings is unusual, but, you know, 10, 20% savings is pretty common.
And still worth it.
Definitely.
We have a number of emails. Several of you mentioned stopping junk mail as a way of making your contribution. Is there a website, any of you know about a website that people can go to for doing that? I think, Wendy, you mentioned that.
Yeah, there's three that I would recommend and actually have been recommended by other websites and so forth. Catalog Choice is one. I think it's catalogchoice.org.
Mm-hmm.
Green Dimes, I'm not sure if it's greendimes.org or greendimes.com. And My Junk Tree, that's all one word, but again, I'm not sure if it's a .org or .com. But so Catalog Choice, Green Dimes, and My Junk Tree.
Okay.
They're all very good.
Okay, well, now we've got thanks. And we've got a number of other emails asking some other practical questions. One, what to do with used batteries? Anybody got an answer on that? Is there an environmentally responsible way of disposing of them?
Yes, and many localities have some kind of battery collection or some kind of hazardous waste collection. If your locality does not, you should try. I'd go to Recycle Bank. Wendy, do you know if that's a .com or a .org?
It's .com.
I think it's recyclebank.com. And they have a lot of information on how to get rid of hazardous wastes.
Second question, computers left on almost indefinitely as a waste of energy. Is that a significant thing that individuals can do, simply turn their computers off?
Steve? It's a simple thing. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Steve.
Does it matter, Wendy? I mean, most people don't even think about it. They look at the screensavers or whatever and don't realize that they're using up electricity.
Well, let's look at it as more than just your computers. There's so many appliances and electronic equipment in your house, and that includes your whole sort of TV entertainment console today. And in your kitchen, you have your toaster oven and your knife sharpener even. I mean, all these things, can openers. And then you have your home office with your computer and printer and all these kind of things. It is a huge drain. They call them vampire. So they suck energy as long as they're on. Some of them are just on to keep the timer on. So it's very good and very helpful, and a simple step is to put all the equipment that's in a certain area onto a power strip. And then when you're done for the day, turn off the power strip, because that will actually not allow the seeping of electricity out of the system, off the grid. So it does save a lot in the course of a year if you are responsible about that. And it's very simple. It takes seconds.
Pretty much anything with a clock on it, with a signal light, or with a remote control is using electricity even when you are not using it. So those are the kinds of things you'd want to put on power strips.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let me turn to Don in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Don, welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I launched an environmental website, noasnotes.com, about 9 years ago in response to questions I received as a conservationist. And I found that there was a genuine interest, by John Q. Public on wanting to save the whales or protect the rainforest. But every day I was asked, it's just me, what can I do? I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And we show them things right in your own backyard, like replacing your lawn with a nature scape. Down here in South Florida, obviously, we have water issues with the Everglades, and over 60% of water, municipal water, is used on lawns. So we worked with Broward County on creating a naturescape program to help people realize the benefits of switching from a lawn to a naturescape.
And what does that mean, a naturescape?
A naturescape basically uses native plants that are low water tolerant, low water plants. They don't need much fertilizer, no pesticides. So you're eliminating runoff, stormwater runoff, saving water pollution that way, and lowering water use and creating habitat for native species.
Thanks very much, Don. That's an interesting idea, Steve Nidell.
I agree.
Let's turn to Balaji in Macomb Township, Michigan. Welcome. You're on the Diane Rehm Show.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Great show and a great topic. And I just wanted to share with you what I do from a personal and family standpoint towards recycling and reuse. I have changed all the light bulbs in my house to the compact fluorescent ones, and I recycle all plastics, recycle all the junk mail, the paper, magazines, newspaper, etc. And also I reuse and donate all the used stuff to Salvation Army so it can be, used by other people. And also, the other thing I've done is my department, I work at a hospital, they don't have, plastic recycling. And I have started a recycling. I placed a couple of bins. I collect the plastic recycle, like bottles and water bottles and stuff. And I bring them home. I separate them, the can and, glass deposits where I can take it for deposit. And I donate the money to the charities. And other plastic recycles I throw at my home plastic recycle bin. And also, at home, we only wash all our clothes in cold water. And also, in the wintertime, in Michigan, we keep the thermostat low. And also, in the summertime, when we use the air conditioner, we use the, thermostat a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm.
And I have made it as a family commitment. Even my son helps me with all this recycling. And from school, he had learned that you could, do all from the kitchen waste, right. Fruits and vegetables, we put it in the compost. He helps me with that. and I only use like cloth bags for the grocery shopping. And these are all the little things that, you know, we do at home. And it's definitely helped with my energy expenditure bill, and it's great for the environment.
Thank you very much for all of that. Let me ask a final question here. A lot of people are suspicious of recycling. And there have been a lot of stories saying, you know, you can separate all these cans and bottles the way Balogy does. You can put them out at the curb. And in the end, they all get dumped in the landfill anyway. What's the real story here, Steve? Does the recycling actually make a difference?
My understanding, yes, it makes an enormous difference. It takes a lot of energy to produce a new can, to produce a new bottle. I mean, in my community, Montgomery County, Maryland, goes to recycling centers. I've seen it myself. And there's enormous savings of materials, of energy from recycling.
Do you agree, Wendy? Does recycling really make a difference?
It absolutely does make a difference. At the beginning of the show, I was mentioning New York City's existing recycling program, which actually is now reducing city global warming emissions by 500,000 metric tons a year. Just to point out, it's not the most perfect program, and it has room for improvement. But NRDC actually just also published a report that showed
I'm going to have to cut you off right there because we're out of time. That's Wendy Gordon from Natural Resources Defense Council, Seth Bauer of Cooler, Inc., and Steve Nadell of the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and thank you so much for sharing all of those very interesting suggestions and comments and spending part of your morning with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.